What's up, everyone? This is a new weekly show I'm going to call Blind Spots, where I discuss and analyze the past week's games from a betting perspective with an added layer that most pro bettors won't talk about the things I'm about to talk about. I've mentioned before, I take copious notes every week when I watch these games, and I like to hone in on the psychological and or sociological aspects of the contest, aka the intangibles, because I believe, and it served me well, that these are the elements that matter most, certainly when it comes to ATS betting and overall team success. We were 3-4 for -3 units in week one, but there's a caveat there. We had the over in Thursday's game, which, as you know, they scored 41 points in the first half. Weather delay happened. Goal line turnovers happened. Somehow that ended at 44. If you don't think that's absurd, you're living in a fantasy land, so I'll leave it at that. And then I had the Ravens last night, Sunday night. you've probably seen the win percentage or the likelihood that they were going to win, 99% with 4 minutes left. Derrick Henry fumbles. The Ravens had a shot to end the game on 4th-and-3. They choose not to. They punt it to Buffalo, and the rest is history. Oh, the absurdity of the NFL. But as I said and as I tweeted out, if you're going to bet this sport, especially as a serious investment, you have to be able to stomach these absurdities and move on, right? Not get too emotional about it. Realize that I was right about those angles. Could have been 5-2 in week one, but it wasn't, right? That's the absurdity that happens in a volatile sport where there's only 17 games for each team. It ain't easy. All right, let's move on. I'm going to talk about pretty much every game, every team, and just give some of my thoughts, analysis, and again, emphasis on things that other pro bettors will not be talking about on their shows. I think Philly fans should be concerned about their defense. I think a lot of it was Dak Prescott playing really well in the opener and coming out with an edge. Jalen Carter leaving the game wasn't a good thing for the Eagles, that's for sure. That's a big hole in the middle of their interior defensive line. He's arguably a top three defensive lineman, maybe the best in the NFL. But even if he's there, I think offenses can work around that front seven that lost some serious players in the offseason. And the thing that bettors won't talk about is Philly has a real dependency, or they at least they did last season, on their defense, keeping them in games, maybe when their offense was sputtering. Like they weren't top five in every category offensively, right? Even though they have a great offense, they still do have a great offense. They still have a great offensive line. But the offensive line and their defense is what they depend on. Jalen Hurts throws the ball less than any other quarterback in the NFL, so they depend on their quarterback the least of any other team. And now we're starting to compare Jalen Hurts on commercials, et cetera, during the game break to Michael Jordan. This is an absurd, I've said absurd a few times in the show already, but it all qualifies. That's an absurd comparison, insane, actually. Jalen Hurts is very good. He has a great mentality. He's a beast, especially on those QB sneaks. But they better hope that Landon Dickerson doesn't keep on getting injured. Back injury left the game for at least a moment. I'm not sure if he came back. I guess he did. But concerned about their defense, concerned about their offensive line a little bit. I mean, their offensive line is still top three in the NFL, as long as they stay healthy. And week one was proof. Teams are coming for the Eagles, right? It's not going to be easy, as easy this season. We already saw a semblance of that. On the other side, first of all, just have to mention Dak Prescott. The weight loss, the marriage, I don't know what's going on with Dak, but I like it. The guy is clearly the bona fide leader of the Cowboys. The Cowboys play better with him in there. I feel like they have a chance to win every game. I think they could really slaughter the Giants at home in week two, especially if Russell Wilson is still playing for the Giants, which I'm sure he will be. So I like everything I saw from Dak. And I think he creates a Cowboys team that's not going to be a pushover this season. But then you add some layers to their defense. Kenny Clark was all over the field. Dante Fowler Jr. making a difference. Defense played better than expected, especially the front seven. So I like Dallas a little more. I like them coming into the season. Thought they could actually win the NFC East. they were right there with Philly, and Philly was lucky to win that game. Now, the aspect that I'm looking at, too, psychologically, is I like what I saw from Brian Schottenheimer. Why? Because I like his disposition. He seems like a very serious coach, a disciplinarian, like a Mike Tomlin type, like not going to smile a lot during the game, going to get up his players' asses. That's what the Cowboys need, right? This has been a clown show in their transactions and their product on the field. Of course, Dak has been injured on and off for the past two seasons. That hasn't helped. But they don't need a Mike McCarthy, like players coach, smiling, hugging guys in the sideline. They need a serious coach who's going to expect a lot from his program. And that's what they have in Brian Schottenheimer. I liked just the way he held himself on the sidelines, the command he seemed to have. I think we might start to see that he's not a bad coaching hire for the Cowboys. Chiefs and Chargers. Justin Herbert seems different. more confident. Zipping throws. I mean, he played masterful quarterbacking in that game against the Chiefs. They deserved to win. They answered the Chiefs every time Patrick Mahomes was, you know, starting to pull out some magic as he always does. The Chargers had an answer, and their defense is serious. I mean, they were hitting those Kansas City players. They were flying all over the field. This is very clearly a Jim Harbaugh energized, sparked up team. And we're seeing the results of Harbaugh and what he can do with the program. They came out on fire. The psychological part that I'm looking at is Jim is developing and championing his QB just like he does, right? Like that's, you know, we talk about his defenses and everything. That seems to be a common brand for his programs. But he was a quarterback, and he knows how to develop and support his quarterback. We see how he like pounds his shoulder pads, Justin Herbert's, before every game. Herbert is a perfect quarterback for him because the physical attributes are obviously there for Justin Herbert. It's the mentals. It's the confidence. Right, it's the risk-taking, the aggressiveness that Herbert needed to improve on, to take shots, to push the ball down the field. He did that against the Chiefs, and it was amazing to watch against a really, really good defense. Herbert and Harbaugh could be an absolutely dynamic duo for seasons to come, and possibly, would not be surprised, a Super Bowl-winning duo leading the Chargers, especially with that defense. Chiefs may lose out this season just because of other teams are gunning for them, right? Like we've seen this over and over again. We know who the Chiefs are. We know how Mahomes can create magic. But let's be real. You can feel it in the energy of the team. It's not quite the same, right? Wide receiver issues. Kelce does not move the same way. The offensive line wasn't as good. 8 quarterback hits, 2 sacks. Mahomes, 6 yards per pass, like not explosive, not like he was dinking and dunking and just making things happen. And he was, I mean, Mahomes at certain points in that game, he did look like the Michael Jordan of the NFL. Like that's a guy you can compare to Michael Jordan. Okay. So, I mean, the Chiefs almost hung in, you know, almost tied it up, could have been hanging around, could have won the game just because of Mahomes. Again, the Chargers answered, but it is different. It does feel different. It feels like the Chiefs are going to have to fight harder than they ever have with a less talented team, particularly on offense, particularly at the wide receiver position. Like if I'm the Chiefs, I'm not giving up D-Hop, DeAndre Hopkins. Like he's not leaving the team just because of his veteran presence, his ability to catch the ball. We saw him make a difference for the Ravens last night. Something's different in Chiefs land. And I did say this season is like they're not going to make the Super Bowl. I said that preseason. They still look very good in a lot of ways. This is not going to be an easy team to beat. I think they probably beat the Eagles next week. They are slightly favored. They're going to really care about that game, obviously, but it ain't the same. Let me drink my protein chocolate milk here for a second. It's called Darigold. Man, I should get a promo for this. Darigold Fit Milk. They have a chocolate milk version, which makes me feel like a 12-year-old again, which is awesome. 25 grams of protein. Let's go. Great little morning snack. Get you going. Not that much sugar either. All right. Giants, Commanders, my Giants. The Giants need a spark. And when they put Jackson Dart in that lineup, they will have a spark. They do not have that spark with Russell Wilson, who still made some plays, still did some Russ-like stuff. But, man, he can't move, you know? He can't move the same way that he used to. If he has max protection and finds a big hole, sure, he can run, just like any quarterback could, just like Eli Manning could. But Russ is not physically the same. It's obvious. I like what I saw from the Giants' defense. They were very legitimate. Limited Jaden Daniels throughout that game. Like I had as a lean at Sport Money, Commanders under 26.5 points, that would have hit with ease. But the thing I'm considering about the Giants, that's something other bettors won't talk about. You saw that interaction with Brian Daboll and Malik Nabers. It didn't look good because it wasn't good. And something I've noticed in Brian Daboll since his first season, right? He wins Coach of the Year, AP Coach of the Year, in his first season with the Giants. They go to the playoffs. They look like a much better team. Since then, Daboll, from the shades that he wears to the weight loss to the swag to that incident with Wink Martindale that Ryan Reynolds mentioned on a podcast with me a few weeks ago, there's something about Daboll that says, I don't listen to anyone. You listen to me. I'm the smartest guy in the room. I won AP Coach of the Year. Don't like that for a head coach. Don't like that for an unproven head coach that doesn't know everything, that probably has some room to improve and to consider other input. I love Malik Nabers' fire. Like, yeah, you could say he's a diva wide receiver. The kid wants to win. The kid wants to do more for his team. And clearly there's a disconnect between Daboll and some of these players. Now, if Daboll loves Jackson Dart and they have a good dynamic and he comes in and plays, that could mean great things or better things for the Giants. But I don't like what I'm seeing from Daboll. I think he's a little too, for lack of a better way to say it, no pun intended, fat and sassy, thinking that he's the man. You're not the man. The Giants have looked pitiful for all but one season that you coached them. And he might be the reason why they're held back. Jaden Daniels, on the other hand, Jaden Daniels, what you won't hear from other sports bettors, Jaden Daniels is the Steph Curry of the NFL officially, right? He's smiling out there. He's, you know, lofting up threes. In other words, he's making these plays like it's easy. He's super fast. I mean, this guy, we don't compare many people to Lamar Jackson, but the ease that Jaden Daniels separates from other defenders when they're chasing him down is like, it's like butter. He's smooth, right? Just like Steph. Who doesn't want to play with Steph Curry? Everybody wants to play with Steph Curry. And this kid, even the Giants front seven is very legitimate. They're ferocious. They sacked him a few times. They pressured him a lot. But this kid is unflappable. Makes the right decisions from game one, week one, super confident, out there smiling. He misses a pass. He's smiling. No big deal. Makes the plays when he needs to. And I like that I saw the Commanders on defense. The veterans are like excited to be there, playing well. That front seven, and particularly their defensive line, we saw some big plays made by the additions that they brought in. Man, Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are not going anywhere. And that kid is, I mean, I can't say how special that kid is more. He is special, special, special. The Cardinals and the Saints, the Cardinals far underperform. This is what they do, right? You're like, you look at the Cardinals and you see maybe some of their acquisitions and where they're going and how they're improving and what they can do on offense, and they underperform. And maybe the Saints came out with fire because everyone thinks they can't win this season. Like Spencer Rattler played better than I certainly thought he would. But Kyler only makes the big plays when he has to. Not sure if you noticed that. Like, yeah, he can run around in the backfield and he can like do a big play here and there and he can make things happen. Very magical, right? But he doesn't do that on first and second downs when it's like the second quarter, it's a tie game, they're up 3-0, 7-0, whatever. He's not doing that. Like, he does it when he has to, when he's under duress, when it's a high-pressure situation. And that's why the Cardinals can hang in games. That's why they're probably going to be a good team to cover against the spread, especially when they're an underdog. But they never seem to have the same juice. And that juice starts with your quarterback. Like, what's the energy that your quarterback is bringing? What kind of leadership is he bringing? Kyler Murray with his sky-high, super big hats that he wears and his tiny little head and body, it's just not translating for me. And I don't think it translates to the players, and I don't think they come out with a lot of juice. I think the Panthers are going to come out with more juice than they will, certainly, in week two. And just something I'm starting to notice, too, from a leadership perspective across this team, I don't think they have much of it. And Jonathan Gannon, for as good as he could be on defense as a defensive mind, he certainly is not showing it very much for the Cardinals. They played better last season, but you're going to New Orleans against Spencer Rattler and the Saints, who are challenged, to say the least. It didn't look very good. I mean, the Saints outgained them in yards per play, 4.7 to the Cardinals, 4.5. Just pathetic, like just not good. I know the Cardinals covered, but it wasn't a good performance. And I think Gannon could be a Brandon Staley type. In other words, a guy that really can't relate or lead real NFL players. I wouldn't think too highly of Indianapolis just yet. Okay, I'm not saying, look, Daniel Jones, he was feeling himself out there. I'm happy for him. It was certainly better than what we've seen from Daniel Jones in the past with the Giants, that's for sure. So for one game, Daniel Jones was the man. Okay, but let's see what happens when they face a real defense. Ooh, just turned a replay game on in the background. Sorry about that. Let's see what happens for the Colts when they face a real defense, because Denver's incoming, and that's a real defense. And they faced a team in Miami that has real problems. So happy for Shane Steichen, happy for Daniel Jones. Tyler Warren is the real deal. I mean, that kid is freakish. Like better product than what I expected across the spectrum, right? Like offense, defense, way better than what I expected. Kudos to the Colts, not taking anything away from a win. A win's a win, a really impressive win. But let's see what happens when a real team and a real defense comes in, because there are issues in Miami. Big time issues. Okay, so I mentioned before the start of the season that Mike McDaniel might be losing this locker room. Like the whispers of that were out there. And, you know, I'm watching Mike McDaniel. And after his first season with the Dolphins, all right, he comes from San Francisco as like this offensive guru. Suddenly Miami is like one of the more innovative, fun teams to watch. Their offense is unbelievably explosive. Now he's wearing, designer shades, his hair slicked back, gold watches. It's like this Miami effect, right? And meanwhile, Tyreek Hill is like hanging his newborn baby off a balcony and just being crazy with all these kids, which that is crazy, okay? Any guy who has like 9 kids from 9 different people, it's a little crazy, all right? One of their assistant coaches was caught beating up a woman like on camera over the weekend. I mean, he was apparently coaching this weekend. Like, I don't know what's going on there. I don't like any of the energy coming from Miami. Stay away from this team. Like, I don't care if they come out next week and they put up 50 points. I'm not trusting this team. I think Mike McDaniel has lost the locker room. Something's off. Like, you can't be the guy who's acting cooler and snarkier and smarter than everybody else at press conferences, and then your team is never really doing much. They're never winning in playoff games. They can't hang around in tough situations outdoors. And now you're starting the season like this. The Dolphins, one of the reasons why I like them in week one is they started off every one of their last 3 seasons 1-0 under Mike McDaniel. Usually, 2-0, there's some 3-0s in there. They start off really well and crisp. If this is how they're starting off in a dome, right, there's no weather implications, that should be cause for concern for the Miami Dolphins. I got to rewatch the Raiders and Patriots game. That's a good win for Pete Carroll. I think clearly the New England wide receiver room is still suspect. They have a young kid who played well. Again, I have to rewatch that game. Brock Bowers is very legitimate. I am not going to say too much about that game because I need to rewatch it. The Steelers and the Jets. I had the Steelers in one of my survivor entries, so really happy to see them pull that out in the end. What a field goal by Boswell at the end of that game, like made it look easy from 60 yards. That was nuts. The Steelers have some offensive line issues. Like Aaron Rodgers didn't have time in much of that game, but the fact that he scored 4 touchdowns, that's a really good sign, especially against the Jets defense that was playing amped up. I mean, Quinnen Williams was making some great plays. But what you feel from this game for the Steelers, like as an analyst, right, you're looking at the psychological aspects to this. the Steelers are saying to themselves now, and I think they always knew it, especially Mike Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers, this can actually work. Like, we can do this, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers made the plays. He was looking downfield. Also, second season off of the torn Achilles, he's probably a little more mobile. Like, he's not going to be super mobile, right? He's not going to be 30-year-old Aaron Rodgers, but he looked better, moved around in the pocket better, saw the field better, trusted his offense better. DK Metcalf proved to be a great addition, made some great plays. Pat Freiermuth does not drop the ball. I mean, that's like, he's a tight end, or you could just throw it out there and he's sticky hands, he's going to get it. Jaylen Warren, kind of a beast, very Ahmad Bradshaw like, the way that he runs from my heyday with the Giants back in the day. So this is a Steelers team who now is really going to start to believe in themselves, even though their defense played like shit. And they do have, like Justin Fields is talking about, putting up 32 on a Hall of Fame defense. He's right. Like, the defense should have played much better than that against Justin Fields and the Jets. But even if their defense sinks, which that's not going to happen very often, I don't think. Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdowns, like the offense putting up 34 points. Wow. The Steelers with belief in themselves and not trying to, like, not needing to go through as much tribulation to get a win, not having to manufacture a win because of a defensive, you know, big play turnover. That's a version of the Steelers I like. Again, anyone betting on their win total under 8.5 is probably starting to feel that one, right? You're probably starting to say, damn, the Steelers are going to do it again. On the other side, Justin Fields, he played really well. Very impressed by Justin Fields, the way that they ran the ball. The key to the Jets' success is going to be that they keep Justin Fields and the run option going, right? Keep him running, keep him on his legs, let him play his brand of football, which, to Aaron Glenn's credit and to the Jets coaching staff's credit, that's what they did. They controlled time of possession in this game, 35 to 25. Now, the Jets defense always plays well early in the season, but as the season goes on, they start to tire out, right? They're always on the field. The offense doesn't do much. This is an offense controlling time of possession, good runs. Like, Breece Hall looked much better. Justin Fields looked very dynamic and very comfortable back there. They can actually hang in games because they're holding onto the ball, and their defense then can play at their best. And they have some real talent on defense, that's for sure. So I like the product that I saw from the Jets. I will just add, again, from that psychological aspect, they were extremely motivated to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. Okay, so they played with a lot of fire. Can they duplicate, replicate, whatever? Can they recreate that fire every single week and produce as consistently? TBD. For their sake, I hope they can. Panthers and Jaguars. I need to rewatch this game like in full, but from what I can tell, I've watched a little bit. Panthers got very unfortunate early, right? Like a turnover, and there was a bad pass by Bryce Young. I mean, it was, he forced the ball in there, but the ball, you know, flew up into the air. Someone else catches it. Okay, so there's a little bit of bad luck there. Then the weather delay kind of screws things up. You know, it's at Jacksonville's home field. I don't know. Maybe it's just more uncomfortable for Carolina. I mean, maybe I'm overcompensating here for Carolina. But it was a tough start. Then they're not converting on turnovers that they create later in the game. They give up a 71-yard run. Like, Jacksonville, in quotes, had a great running day, but a lot of it was that 71-yard run that they gave up that set Jacksonville up for another score. So it was just a clumsy, tough start for Carolina. On the other side, like, I think the Jacksonville was very energetic, excitable, like Travis Hunter out there. I think he was a great locker room guy. You know, whether he's making plays or not, he's supporting everybody. He's laughing, you know, it's a big smile. So there's some juice to this Jaguars team. Again, I have to rewatch it to kind of assess more of their side. But for Carolina, when we talk about the psychology going from week one to week two, that was a bad product, and it was a clumsy product that they put out there. I expect them to be better in week two. And it's not that I think the Carolina Panthers are a great team, but Bryce Young made some good plays, and he's a disciplined, good kid. Like, he's going to shore up some of this stuff, right? There's just everything kind of went wrong at first for the Panthers, which is different than what happened in, like, for Miami, for example. Like, Miami, things went wrong, but they didn't do much to help themselves. They didn't look crisp. They didn't look disciplined. Like after the first drive, it was just a bad look. Carolina, they looked decent actually. I mean, it was a 3-3. It was a close game, and then just things kind of, you know, it was a cascade of events that sent them down the wrong journey there. But you know, I don't think that's necessarily an indication of what we're going to see from the Panthers every week. Cleveland and Cincinnati. The Browns did it again. They covered. Thank God. That was a big cover for me because, you know, with all the other BS going on this week, I feel like I needed that one. But almost never a doubt, right? Like the Browns completely outplayed the Bengals in many ways. 327 to 141 yards. Cleveland almost outgained Cincinnati by 200 yards. And Flacco threw two interceptions, and they missed a field goal. Cincinnati, very fortunate to win this game. Cincinnati still cannot stop anybody on defense. Flacco and the Browns should have had more points. Their defense played very hard, ferocious. Cincinnati had 2 yards per rush, okay? And Burrow looked a little shaken up the entire game again, as you would expect. Cincinnati, very fortunate to escape with a win. The Browns are going, you know, the Browns are going to be a formidable foe with Flacco as long as he's healthy, and especially in an AFC North divisional matchup. The Bucs were outgained 358 to 260. Like, I thought the Falcons started out playing much better football, much more energetic football. But, you know, the thing about Tampa is they have veteran leaders on both sides of the ball. Continuity and leadership matters. They have the experience, and Baker just made the plays when he had to eke out a win. And sometimes that's okay, right? Like, you're not going to put up 450 yards every week. This is a divisional matchup. Things have gone wrong for them in the past. Things went right for them this time. This is kind of how the Falcons beat them twice last season. So regression was due. Tampa Bay comes out the winner. I need to look more into what the Falcons did, you know, did or didn't do in this game. But this is where, like, continuity, right? Psychology, intangibles. Like, the continuity and the leadership of the Bucs on both sides of the ball made the plays that they needed to and limited the Falcons. But it looked like the Falcons were about to go up like 10-17-0 at the start of this game. Calm, handled it, took care of business, hung around, made the plays when it mattered at the end. They were outgained, but I still feel good about Tampa and the way they handled that situation. The 49ers. All I can say is, despite all their injuries, I mean, Trent Williams went out for a little while. George Kittle was on the sideline in the second half, right? I mean, the Niners are pros, and Brock Purdy is a resilient kid who sees the field very well. I mean, that could have been an interception at the end, the final throw for a touchdown. But this team is well coached. This team, like, just knows how to be buttoned up in a professional outfit. And sometimes that's all you need, right? Kind of like Tampa Bay. Right. But it's going to be rough. Like, for a little while, it's going to be rough. There's too many injuries at wide receiver. There's a lack of depth that they used to have on defense. Their defense actually played really well. But I think, you know, better offenses are going to be able to expose them a little bit more. But this is a professional organization that, if Brock Purdy and the 49ers can get out of the first few weeks and all these injuries, and, you know, get Kittle back, if they can get out of this with more wins than losses, there's a very good season incoming, especially when they get very healthy. On the Seattle side, Sam Darnold was fine, but he was not exceptional. 6.5 yards per pass, 150 total yards. I worry about the Seattle Seahawks' explosivity. Like, this doesn't qualify to me as an offense that's going to be able to go up and down the field ever. They're going to have to pick and pick and, you know, dink and dunk and little runs here and there and rely on their defense. And their defense is very good. I mean, I think their defense showed a lot today. You know, they fly around the ball. It's a Mike McDonald thing. This is what he does. But I'm concerned about that Seattle offense. Denver, defense looked amazing, okay? Don't have a lot of concerns about their defense. And that's against a rookie in Cam Ward who looked pretty damn good. I mean, the kid has poise, but the thing I want to mention here that you might not hear in a lot of shows is that, and Ryan Reynolds mentioned this a few weeks ago on my show too, sharp guy, that Ryan Reynolds. Bo Nix is really, I mean, he's an average quarterback, right? Like, you can see that. right? When he's throwing the ball, the way he delivers it, the way he moves around in the pocket, he's average, especially as far as arm talent goes. Like, Cam Ward already looked like he had a far more elite arm. Far more. There's just more juice to it. There's more, you know, the form is beautiful, right? He can really zip it in there. Bo Nix is a good student. Like, I still really like this Denver team. And they can blow this, like, they can blow the doors off of bad defenses. But Tennessee is not a bad defense. And Cam Ward, as he continues to develop, and it might come quicker than we think, Titans are going to be feisty. Titans are going to be a little feisty, guys. And you know, as much as I like Bo Nix and the Broncos, they were somewhat fortunate to escape that game too. Of course, maybe the biggest story of the week is the Green Bay Packers. The Packers from Lambeau Field. Very impressive. Very, very impressive. But here's, and you know, there are no buts as far as Green Bay's performance goes. On both sides of the ball, pretty scary, right? Their wide receiver room is healthy. Excuse me. The wide receiver room is healthy. Jordan Love looks fantastic. He's healthy. Their run game is formidable. And their defense, ran out with Micah Parsons, who just, he doesn't have to make every play, but he sends their defense to like a different elite level. Their front seven looks ridiculously good. I mean, they were getting after Jared Goff. They were suffocating them in the run game. Like, the Packers were very impressive. What I want to talk about is, think about how tough the energy is going to be to then replicate it for this week's game in week two, right? Green Bay at home, division opponent. Lions beat them twice last season. Fired up, a sunny day in Green Bay, and they deliver in a big way, right? Now, how do you replicate that energy and that juice and that elite form for a game against a non-divisional opponent on a short week against a quarterback like Jaden Daniels? This is a Thursday night game, who does not get flustered, right? The psychology of week one to week two, like early in the season, over the season, as the season keeps going and wanes on, teams, they find their consistent form. They you know, discover more of who they are and who they can be. So you start seeing more consistency. But week one to week two, when now the whole NFL world is talking about you, you have to do that again in week two against a more challenging opponent, in the sense that you're not as familiar with them and there's a little more dynamism to what they do. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Packers look in week two. I think this is a very, very good team. Let's not jump on the Super Bowl bandwagon just yet. The Houston Texans are going to be in many games like they were today, but many games are going to look exactly like they did today too. Both teams under 300 yards, like great defense in various parts of the game from Houston. But again, an offensive line that's going to hold C.J. Stroud back. C.J. Stroud has to make too many plays all on his own. A run game that's very pedestrian. It's just tough to see how the Houston Texans are going to like go far into the playoffs, and they might have the AFC South in jeopardy at this point, right? Like they might not be the winners of it. I mean, I could see that being a real situation, especially with a tougher schedule. The AFC South is easy in general. That's what people, but you know, when you face divisional opponents, it's never easy. A lot of games are going to look like exactly how they looked for their game against the Rams. Right there with them, C.J. Stroud special. Oh, my God. It's all defense. What's going on offense? And don't sleep on those Rams and their defense either. We'll talk about them a little more later this week. But that's like Texans games and unders and just like defensive battles, probably going to look the same. Last but not least, the Bills and the Ravens is a great example of why the quarterback matters most. And Lamar Jackson is just as good as Josh Allen, in my opinion. Like these are two of the most talented, if not the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL. What an absolute show. But when the Bills were down 15 points, their coach put the onus of the entire game on his shoulders. Of course, Derrick Henry fumbling and certain things happening on the Ravens side helped. But Josh Allen could not be stopped in the fourth quarter, right? Like something like 249 yards, and like just insane, right? Whereas on the other side, The Ravens, even after the Derrick Henry fumble, they have 4th-and-3. They could end the game. They have Lamar Jackson, 2-time NFL MVP, and a talent as rare as anyone in the NFL. And they don't try and get the first down. They don't try and just end the game right there. I mean, it was truly unbelievable. Like, really poor coaching choices by Harbaugh. And I think Harbaugh is an issue. He is laissez-faire until he needs to be, more aggressive and stern. But you can tell he gets excited for his players. He's a player's guy. He's loved in Baltimore. But I don't think there's a killer instinct or mentality in this team. It shows in the stats. They've done this many times before. As much as any team in the NFL, they lose these close games and they don't close out games. To me, that's a coaching thing. Put the ball in Lamar's hands. Let them win the damn game. This is an offense that gained 8.6 yards per play. I mean, you don't trust that to gain 3 yards when it matters most. You're going to rely on your defense, who Josh Allen was mowing down in the fourth quarter. It didn't make any sense. Baltimore, probably the better roster, but in the end, it didn't matter. Why? Coaching and quarterback. Better coaching, better quarterbacking, more quarterbacking from the Bills. Bills win. And just an unbelievable display of how you can think, like, I was, texting my friends, like, these Ravens are a juggernaut, could be their year. Man, this is what I mean by the intangibles of the game. The choices that were made by the coaching staff, the onus on Josh Allen made the difference in that game. Of course, the Derrick Henry fumble didn't matter. Okay, I thought this would be a little shorter of a pod on Mondays, but I like it. 36 minutes. Check me out, Farley Betts on Substack. That's farleybets.substack.com. We were 3-4 in week 1, could have been 5-2, like I said. Can't wait for week 2. Can't wait for more NFL action tonight. Vikings and Bears should be very good. Look out for more from me all week. And let's go. Farley Betts coming back, coming at you later. We got the preview podcast later in the week and plenty more content on Substack this week.